everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film. Joining me this week, like always, is the man behind the controls, Steven Schleicher.
Hello.
Hey, Steven.
What's going on, Zach?
We are wrapping up our Richard Linklater couplet of movies this week with his most recent release, Everybody Wants Some.
Everybody
two
wants
exclamation
some.
Points.
Bump, bump.
Yeah. This is a movie that just came out this spring, summertime?
It came out in March at South by Southwest.
Sure.
And then it hit a theatrical release at the end of March. And I believe I saw it in like April or early May. So it went direct to video very quickly.
Yeah.
It had a very limited release. It was, it showed in 19 locations on March 30th. And then it went to video shortly after that.
Yeah, I remember seeing it up on iTunes really short after it had debuted. So.
Yeah, I was really surprised that it had such a limited release. I thought that, especially in the Midwest area, this should have been maybe a little bit more popular with some of the themes that were running throughout.
Yeah.
But I guess college film in the springtime is probably not the best time to get kids thinking about college and reminiscing about college as much as it is them wanting to get out of college.
Yeah.
So.
And so this movie, I kind of feel like shares a lot of themes with Dazed and Confused and some of the type of characters that we see. So Everybody Wants Some follows the main character is this new freshman at a university,
Jake.
And he is on the baseball team. And so the cast of characters is really the like half of the baseball team for this college
because
they're all living in these houses together.
Right. Because apparently, I forget the reason why they're living in these houses that are rented by someone else because like their dorm or something
like it was like full.
Was
full
the athletic
like dorm
that.
Was too full,
and so they got these two houses that they've rented off campus, and so these guys basically turn it into a party house, while their coach is like, "There'll be no drinking, no women, no boozing, no drugs," and all the while the older team players are like, "Oh yeah, screw that," and they're just going crazy, and so Jake is being introduced, and this is, you know, a lot of people. It's interesting that you say that it's like Dazed and Confused because a lot of people say it is the sequel to Dazed and Confused. In Dazed and Confused, we looked at someone who was a pitcher who was going into high school in 76. This one takes place in 1980 when a guy is graduating, a hotshot pitcher, very much like the kid we saw last week, coming into college on his first day. And it's interesting that they did change the names because it would be so interesting for this to be that sequel of the kid that we met in Dazed and Confused just 4 or 5 years later in his college career.
Yeah, and if you really think about it, it wouldn't necessarily change things that much from this movie because you're only bringing over one character. You have to bring one more character over because Jake has a friend who played baseball with him in high school, but he lives like in the punk rock house.
Right.
And so that you don't need to bring one other character over to really make this film happen. But essentially, it's like a spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused.
But Linklater has said that this movie is more of a spiritual successor to a Boyhood. Because Boyhood, apparently, or this movie begins right where Boyhood ends with a guy showing up at college and meeting his new roommates and a girl.
So, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But doesn't Boyhood like go into modern times?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's just, you know, he's saying like a spiritual sequel to that. So it'd be
interesting.
You know, he Linklater equates it more to Boyhood than he does Dazed and Confused. But I think if we examine some of the things that are going on in this movie, it's almost exactly like Dazed and Confused.
Right.
A decade later or more later.
Because a lot of the interaction between the baseball players hinge on how competitive they are and essentially how macho they can be, which is a definite theme from Dazed and Confused. And you watch these baseball players essentially just like get pissed at each other and then get drunk. And then like have fun and then they're like, just upset at each other and hazing them all the time. And so there's definitely these themes of like macho dudes.
Right. Especially in 1980, in 1980. I mean, you're coming right off as one podcaster will say, this is like post Coke pre AIDS. So this is right when, you know, the drugs are freely flowing. Everyone's getting high and free sex. And it's right before the AIDS epidemic really hit hard, where people were having, you know, free love and sex any time that they want. I find this a fascinating movie because while Dazed and Confused explored people trying to find their group.
Mm-hmm.
This one really focuses on here is your group, here is your family.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have friends that are part of other groups. In the case of the punk rock house.
Yeah.
Where he does still have a friend with that and they get along over there. But here are these baseball players that very easily slip into any role that they want to so that they can experience that all the while being close and true to their team.
Yeah, it's an even a point in the film where they are used to going to this bar, the Sound Machine, which is this disco thing.
Disco
and
bar,
they have this one real tool of a pitcher who's insane and gets the whole team kicked out. So they're going to go to the Country Bar and they just simply go home, change in some plaid and a cowboy hat, and they go and do the flying or the Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah.
Which was weird because I forgot that's an actual dance and not just something you do at a wedding. I was like, why are they, it's at a bar doing the Cotton Eye Joe? That was weird. But then they do it again when they go to the punk rock show. Mm-hmm. They all just throw on ripped up t-shirts and then go. And then they make an appearance at a theater party. They don't much change for that.
Maybe a little bit.
I think they Jake changed their attitude a little bit.
Right.
So they are, it is this group that has the ability to morph.
So is that because they think they identify as one thing, but they're really a bunch of other things? And I ask that because when you do get into the theater group party, each of, I think it was only three of them that went, Jake and his two friends, right? The other two kind of get into it. I mean, one of them agrees to participate in, one of the activities and kind of really enjoys it.
Uh-huh.
And the others are like, this is kind of okay. And they don't really freak out too much about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think at the end, then one of the guy goes, I went home with that, the dominatrix. She wasn't a real dominatrix.
Right,
she was
just
a thing. So we just had a, you know, we just had a good time. Yeah, they do. And I don't know if it's a idea of they're just trying to have the best time possible. And they think the best way to do that is to just kind of morph into this group but I do believe there is, and I think it comes out through Jake and his kind of his pithy statements throughout the entire thing of like musing on who they actually are, that there is an extra layer to all these people besides just being a baseball player, which is really interesting to me because in college it's very easy to spot who the baseball players are because they all look the same and they're all continually wearing their baseball hats. And there's just an attitude about baseball players. So it was interesting to see this because there is definitely a baseball player stereotype that is through this movie. But then they add that extra part of most of the characters to kind of flesh them out more besides just being a baseball player. I mean, I mean, what was Jake's like college essay was on like Greek myths and stuff. So when he like talks about them easily and without like difficulty.
Right. So I guess that's certainly then another way you could look at that is maybe they're all fronting that they are part of this group, but they really want to be part of other groups, whether it be the disco scene or the cowboy group or the punks or the theater group. But they all are kind of forced into this classification. So I guess there could be two different ways you look at this movie.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it hinges on Jake's big speech about his Greek paper at the end when he's talking to the girl he's fallen in like with, when he's talking about, I don't remember the myth. It's about the rolling the boulder up the hill and finding your purpose in rolling it up the hill and being okay with that. And I think that kind of revealed a lot of his character of he found purpose in doing this thing that he kind of was somewhat forced into or just his thing in his box when he found purpose in it. But he has other, I guess, sides of his personality.
So he finds purpose in baseball?
Yeah.
Or baseball is a means to getting an education?
I think it is a found purpose in baseball, that this over and over again thing he still found purpose in. That was the way I kind of read it and reflected on it a little bit, but it's probably worth watching again because it is at the end of this movie in like really quick bursts.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's really fascinating about this is this takes place, doesn't it take place on one night or just over?
No,
it's a weekend.
It's Thursday to Sunday. Yeah, well, it's Monday morning.
The first weekend. It's like move-in weekend leading up to the official first day of baseball practice and the class is starting on Monday. And so they go through a lot over that weekend. And Jake goes through a lot and he's met this girl that he really kind of digs and he's hitting on her. And they go kind of go out on a date and get it on at the end. And then at the very end, he goes to class and he just sleeps.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, he's kind of experienced everything that college is about in one weekend, right?
Yeah.
Meeting
it was real
friends,
fast.
Meeting girls, having fun, having different experiences that you probably wouldn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual classroom experience is maybe a lot less important than the social experience. And we do hear that a lot from, I don't want to say new age college, but a lot of new thinking in college is that, yeah, you really aren't going to college to learn book learning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're really not going to college to learn a trade. You're going to learn social skills at college and how to work in those social skills later on. So this movie maybe kind of reinforces that a little bit in places.
Yeah, especially in the mentality of the baseball players, because their running joke is to essentially make up a major.
Mm-hmm.
And just run with it. And the cliche is asking someone what their major is instead of anything really about them.
Right.
And yeah, so that's an interesting thing. Because I don't think Jake actually, you don't ever really find out what his major is. Mm-hmm. One of the other baseball players says he's going to be a cunnilingualist.
Yeah, yeah.
So they definitely don't take the classroom type stuff seriously. And it's more about the baseball and the social aspect of college.
But I don't think any of them, except for one, is what you would classify as a dumb jock, though, because everybody does have their own unique thing that they're into, and they all come off as fairly intelligent, you know, college kids, freshmen through senior kids.
Yeah, that's an also an interesting, like, subversion of the jock stereotype you generally would see in a college movie, of the jocks are portrayed as good at a sport, but dumb as a rock in classroom. The problem is you can't do that when your entire movie is just essentially jocks. Otherwise, everyone would be stupid and nothing would be really articulate and interesting.
One of the things I found interesting is one of the characters, one of the teammates, turns out he's ineligible because he's been going around from college to college and he's like almost 30 or something like that. And he's still passing himself off as a college student so he can play baseball because he just loves baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's not good enough to play on a major team or anything like that. But I find that also a kind of very telling about this person. And we see this a lot with college kids is they get up to that senior year and they're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll go to graduate school.
Yeah.
I'll extend this a little bit longer. Oh, I'll go to another school and pretend that I'm, you know, 20, so I can play baseball a little bit longer and play baseball just a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that interesting too, that you see some of this happening in this movie.
Yeah, it is in a sense like Ben Affleck's character in Dazed and Confused, where Ben Affleck's character flunked, so he had to essentially redo his senior year, and is still trying to capture that glory of being the top person and influencing his pain on freshmen. In the reverse, and everybody wants them, this pitcher is purposefully going back to school just so he can relive that moment of being the pitcher and being like the weird California dude who's giving everyone weed and waxing poetic about buildups and songs and stuff.
Right.
And so he is. It's the same thing, but it comes off in a different manner of Ben Affleck's anger. And this pitcher's just like love of baseball and just what that brought him socially in college that he just can't let it go.
So what other similarities do you see between this and Dazed and Confused?
I think, I've only seen two Richard Linklater films. I think Richard has a hard time writing women. Because they're not featured prominently in any of the films. And if they are, they have qualities of the dudes. Like, they are, like, a dude, I guess.
Right.
And they kind of just, like, fit in with that group. And they're not super different. I think there are, like, really, really one female character in this. You can, like, make an argument. Maybe there's a second one, like, Jake's girl's friend. But she's not like featured prominently really in the film.
No, there's really only one female.
Yeah. It's a stretch to say two.
Yeah.
And, she is essentially there to bring out a side of Jake that you wouldn't see otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Boyhood features women. Cause like one of them won an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a little bit different, but definitely these two movies don't, I definitely don't develop female characters, and they just kind of serve as a point to develop the main character.
So, and what do you think that is? I mean, I don't know much about Linklater's childhood, but we do know that he has based at least Dazed and Confused a lot on things that happened to him when he was in high school. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Everybody Wants Some is based on anything that happened to him when he was in college. I do know that this film was been in production, or at least they were trying to make this since 2005.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if this has anything to do with things that happened to him in college, although he would have been in college around this same time.
Mm.
So maybe he didn't have a whole lot of interaction with women. Maybe he is one of these characters in his movies that's kind of, oh, what do I do around girls? What am I supposed to do here in these situations? So maybe because of that, he doesn't have a lot of interaction, or he doesn't develop his female characters as much as they probably could be.
Yeah, it's interesting that the main characters in Dazed and Confused and Everybody Wants Some are, you know, in a way, socially awkward around girls. I think Jake is better than the main character we see in Dazed and Confused, but you definitely see Jake, like, strike out a couple times and, like, not develop the first relationship with the girl he meets, and it takes a while for him to kind of get in a groove, and he's definitely that, like, wide-eyed puppy dog in the back of the seat when he first meets this girl. So, I mean, maybe that's the way, you know, Richard was around women when he was at that time. But, you know, a lot of the other characters are very upfront about the sexuality between themselves and the other female characters. So it's an interesting play of this kind of bashfulness around women, but then also this kind of upfront sexuality that guys have in their conversations when they're in high school and in college that he does get really well.
Right. Do you think characters like Jake and what was the character from last week? Started with an M, right?
I forget characters' names.
Yeah, me too. But
worst.
Do you think that these characters are intentionally lost characters? Mitch. Do you think Mitch and Jake are lost because it serves the story, or are they lost because this is what the creator is really feeling in these situations? Hey, this is, I was really lost, dazed and confused when I was going into high school.
Yeah.
And then when I went to college, everybody just wanted to get it on and do these things together. And it was even a more confusing time.
You know, I mean, it's probably both, because it is a good story to have a character confused and disoriented in their situation and trying to figure out the best path to move forward, to, you know, kind of have like a good life or be successful. But that's also a way a lot of people feel when they're in these new situations, especially if you're maybe a little bit socially awkward, like high school can be hard.
Yeah.
And so can college, because you are, unless you have like a clique or a group, like a team to kind of coalesce around, you are thrown into a dorm and you kind of have to live with a roommate and you have to figure out new social structures. And so there is this, if you're not great at that, then it's a very, you know, hard time to kind of move forward.
And it seems like for Jake, at least, it doesn't, do you remember if it said where he was moving from, what town he was from?
No, it's
because
just some
Texas thing. It just seemed like maybe he was a small town kid coming into a big place for the first time. And it's like, there's other people. I think the other one wasn't he a first timer? Was the black kid was also.
He'd been there for a while.
Oh, he'd been there for a while. Because I thought there was another freshman coming in at the same time. Not the guy that ran off to be with his girlfriend the entire weekend.
It was,
there
was him and then the guy in the class when he falls asleep. They were freshmen.
Oh, right.
And then the curly haired kid.
Okay.
With like the braces or whatever.
Yeah.
Who was good at knuckles.
Okay.
He was a freshman.
Because it just seemed like everyone but him just slipped right into, I mean, the other two, they had their moments of some, oh, you mean I'm not supposed to do this kind of thing, getting the group in trouble. But they seem to adapt a lot easier than Jake did in this. And so I just found that interesting that our two central characters in both of these films are just really kind of fresh faces that don't have any swagger. They don't have any cachet. They don't have any courage, almost, it seems like. They don't have, what's another word I'm looking for? It's almost like they don't have, it's not initiative, but they don't almost believe in themselves in a new situation.
Yeah.
And I find that very fascinating.
You know, Mitch was definitely trying to find his place in high school. And it was hard because he was hanging out with all these senior dudes for most of the time, right? And Jake as well. Jake was having a lot, and he, you know, he has just a lot of one-off lines of like, why are we doing this? Like, why is this us? Like, why are we so competitive and things of that nature? That Jake does seem to, you know, wonder if this is all there is, maybe. Because, you know, I think he says something when they're at the punk rock show of like, you know, look at these guys, they're just kind of like free. And so he's definitely trying to figure out if he made the right decision, it seems like, especially when he meets his friend and he's like, you know, I'm done playing baseball, this is what we do now. It definitely seems like he had some reservations about moving forward, even though at the end he kind of says he's like found his purpose, or he found meaning inside of baseball.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a hard thing again, you know, if you're coming into, especially a small high school, coming into a big school.
Yeah.
That would be really hard.
Oh yeah. I mean, I see it happen a lot. You know, this university here is not a big university, but for someone that comes from a place where you play 8-man football and there's only 30 kids in the entire school, moving to Hayes is a big experience.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
for me, I grew up in a town of 800 people, but I was next door to a town of 15,000. I was next door to KU and Topeka and all that. So for me, being around large groups was not weird, but I do know that there are some people when they go from small town to a big college, even bigger than here, they kind of have a freak out and they don't know what to do. And they cut loose and they make a lot of mistakes. Yeah. And you see some of them, I mean, that's the other thing that I was really surprised in this is at least in the weekend that they're moving in, you see people cutting loose like what normally happens on a first weekend of college.
Yeah.
But you didn't see anybody making major blunders in their life that will affect them going down the road. Right. Like I follow our, universities, on Twitter, just the university initials on Twitter. So you see all sorts of fantastic things that pop up.
Oh yeah.
And over the weekend, it was like, hey, I want to give props to the guy that sprinted away from the cop. And by the time the cop was trying to catch him, he was already two blocks ahead. So it's like, nobody's making those kind of mistakes in these kinds of movies. I mean, you see some, certainly some harassment and some hazing, especially in both of these movies that today would be like grounds for the team to be, you know, kicked out of the college and all that stuff. But it's back then it's good, harmless fun, but you don't see people making major life screw ups when they go to college, especially coming from a small town to a bigger town where they just totally get inundated and over their heads in what's going on. So I kind of like that aspect here that everybody can get along and everybody's kind of watching out for one another.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because in Dazed and Confused, like felonies are committed when they're like destroying all the mailboxes and throw a bowling ball through a guy's car window.
Right.
None of that really happens here. Like they do destroy a house that is not theirs. And like after that big part of
that was because of the waterbed, right?
Yeah. No, there was after their like big party on the second floor, you could see like someone went through a window.
Oh, right.
And there was like besides that, like, for college houses go, I've been in some pretty bad college houses. I've lived in some pretty bad college houses. So it really wasn't horrible. That is interesting that like, the worst thing that could have happened to him was like a coach walk in, which was which I was expecting. Like there was never like really bad repercussions for anyone in this film, which I guess is fine because really, I mean, you're living in a time when it was all legal for them to drink and you know, it was good. So there wasn't any of that real anything they were working against. There was no like opposing force for them to overcome in this film besides essentially maybe like their own existential angst of like who they are.
Right.
Which even that is not big. It was just, it's interesting. I really dug this movie. I liked it a lot more than Dazed and Confused. Yeah. Okay. I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was funnier.
Yeah, I think it was too. I mean, I kind of felt, with Dazed and Confused, I kind of felt like, wow, these people are just really horrible to one another.
Yeah.
Here, there was a lot more love and a lot more, hey, we're goofing around kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I could see why this one you would like a lot better. I enjoyed this, but to me, it was like, oh, well, this is the same theme. This is the same. This is the same overall concept that we saw in Dazed and Confused. So when I watched this, I was kind of, because I was super excited about seeing this. And in the end, I was kind of like, well, I've kind of already seen this movie.
Yeah. And I think they're that thing you mentioned, like they are rough on each other, but mm-hmm. there's like this love between other characters. And I thought that was more evident in this movie than Dazed and Confused, mm-hmm. which I liked because there is a tendency for dudes to be like that to each other, but right. it is like masking emotions that they're not comfortable of displaying to one another.
Right.
And I think that was really evident when like this crazy wild pitcher who just like talks this huge game and is just crazy weird. Right. And he got the team kicked out of the bar and finally they're playing baseball and he's just talking on this dude who's like an MLB prospect. So he's like, he's throwing the heat and the dude just rips a home run mm-hmm. off of him mm-hmm. and he gets so mad and all this stuff. But eventually, after a while, the guy comes up to him. He's like, hey, it was a nice hit. He says, okay, we're cool. And I thought there was enough moments like that where you watch these dudes be angry and mad at each other because mm-hmm. they're super competitive, but then let their guard down to show really what they were feeling. And they are essentially this weird sports collective family.
Right.
And they're going to be hard on each other, but they all like each other enough. And mm-hmm. I liked that he was able to show that side of the dude relationship instead of just a macho beat your chest type stuff most of Dazed and Confused.
Yeah. Yep. No, I can totally see that. And I was going to say, you know, it'd be interesting in another 20 years to see what Linklater's take on, you know, what happens after college, mm-hmm. right? But I think we've already seen that in Before Sunrise, where these two Americans meet each other in Vienna and spend the night together exploring and talking and getting to know one another. That would mm-hmm. be your backpacking college kid kind of story. So maybe we've already seen that, what mm-hmm. happens after college. But I kind of want to see his take on, you know, that first job, that
yeah.
first experience of, okay, I've graduated, now what kind of thing.
Yeah, because that is an equally weird situation to enter mm-hmm. because in high school, you move, you get
a crap job, right? And it doesn't matter what you do at a crap job.
Oh, no, I'm saying like if you enter high school as a student, like you coming in with a class, so you're still right. surrounded by friends, mm-hmm. you move into college and you might still have some friends, mm-hmm. but you're going to kind of get a group of people that if you live in the dorms, you're going to like live with and go right, to these classes right. with. You go to work, it's not like you're going to work for most people, like surrounded by your friends, especially mm-hmm. when you start.
Right.
And even then, they're like a coworker, or not, like it's people you go hang out with generally on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So it's just a weird different relationship where you go and you spend a lot of time with these people and then you go home mm-hmm. and then you see like the people you want to hang out with most of the time.
It's an interesting relationship. So it would be interesting for Linklater to explore that, I think, because, and then this is typically what happens, right? You get out of college.
Yeah.
And you go and you're into the real world for a year or two. And maybe you have some people that you may go have drinks with or whatever mm-hmm. for a little bit. Maybe you're starting to find new romances, but you're like, oh, man, I miss my college friends or I miss my high school friends. Mm-hmm. You go back and miss them. And then you're like, I don't miss these people at all.
Yeah.
Right. I think that'd be interesting to see that take of, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? And then to go and find out that all of your friends are just as bad. Mm-hmm. Or worse than where your main character is at. I think that'd be an interesting story. And for him to explore that, I think would be probably a very unique take
yeah.
on that idea and that concept. But I think in 20 years, he'd be ready for another, you know, let me
20
tell
years.
A, that's how much time, time. I mean, it was 19.
Well, I guess it's true.
1990, what is it?
Three
for Dazed and Confused. Mm-hmm. And it's 2016. So
yeah,
that's, what is that? That's 23 years.
He shoot a whole new boyhood in that time.
Well, he did shoot a whole boyhood in that time, right? Isn't that what it is? 93 from 2016. That seems to be,
yeah, it's like right? 23
years. Man, yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah. It's like my whole life.
So what other things did you get out of this movie?
I don't know. Like it's not.
It's kind of like what you said.
It's kind of what it is, you mm-hmm. know. There's not like a whole huge deep level to this thing. Mm-hmm. It's especially watching Dazed and Confused right before this is like, oh yeah, they're very similar.
Yeah, the same use of music,
yeah.
period music.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot more musical sequences in this movie than what we saw in Dazed and Confused. I mean, you've got to spend all this time at the different clubs.
Yeah,
so we're going to see. Here's a disco sequence.
Yeah.
Here's a country bar sequence. Here's another disco sequence. Here's another mm-hmm. country bar sequence. Here's a punk rock sequence. Here's a theater group musical
yeah,
sequence.
Yeah, I mean, we get a punk rock version of Gilligan's Island.
It felt like a really weird extended musical that I was watching mm-hmm. with just all these, not with people singing, but yeah. with just these musical interludes mm-hmm. Intercut throughout, that if you took those out, this would be a much shorter film and maybe...
Probably better.
I don't know better. I got about the third time I saw them do one of those.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm kind of tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that they spent a lot of time doing it. So I was like, okay, I can appreciate this. Because they shot this in like a month or 2 months
oh, well.
In Texas from That's October to December
yeah.
of 2014. So it's, you know, it is what it mm-hmm. is.
I did feel that those sequences kept the pace of the movie along.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such an interesting story structure, and I'm not sure if it works completely.
Mm-hmm.
It is like a really fast, but it's really dense, really first half of the film.
Right.
Like we get like 2 days, a couple parties, like a couple bar sequences. And then I paused it for a second. I was like, oh my God, we still have like 45 minutes of this movie left. We have a lot. And so it really, the pace of the movie slows down at that point. Like you have a long sequence of them just playing baseball.
So I wonder, the first draft of this film began in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
He shopped it around all the way through a bunch of different studios. He even left The Incredible Mr. Limpet to go work on this and some other stuff. They started shooting on October 13th of 2014,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the last day of photography was on December 2nd of 2014. It was not until 2016 that they released this movie. So this movie sat on the shelf for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure it was done. This is not a hard, this is a 3 months after you were done shooting it, this should be in the theater kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what about this? And even the release dates bounced around. It was supposed to be released originally in February, and then it was supposed to come out in April, and then it was bounced back to March. What about this film made it either sit on the shelf or get this limited run or whatever? We see a lot of rising stars in here. Tyler Hoechlin, who is now the Superman on the Supergirl TV series, played the main heavy duty baseball player guy, which was really amazing. If you see the mustachioed Tyler Hoechlin, I guess some people may have known him from Teen Wolf on MTV, I think it's Teen Wolf. And then he goes to this big, beefy mustachioed guy in this movie, and then he turns around and he's playing Superman next, and doesn't even look like him. But you have him in here. You have Will Britton. You have Ryan Guzman, Blake Jenner, Zoe Dutch, Glenn Powell, Wyatt Russell. There's not a whole lot of super recognizable names in this.
But you know what was weird is I was watching this with Aubrey, and she knew 3 different people. She's
Who
are they? Well, that guy is like related to Reese Witherspoon, and then that guy's on something, and... It was like some of the characters is on Scream Queens on Fox, and then Jake did like 2 years on Glee as a character. So she actually knew like more cast in this movie than like anything we've ever watched.
Okay,
which was really weird.
That does though kind of fall into the teen comedy genre where back in the 80s you would have a lot of easily recognized comedians and other personalities in these kinds of movies, so that people would go, "Oh, there's that person or that person or that person." So. That's interesting.
Which is great because it's like just long hair and a mustache. Like you don't recognize anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just going through some of these other people and trying to figure out what is the movie that caused Paramount to just say, okay, we need to get it out there. Unless, of course, it's coming after Linkletter's Oscar win on The Boy.
Yeah. You just wait a while because that came out. Because
Boyhood came out in 2014.
August. So it was out before they started shooting this.
So, but by the time it won
Oscar
Oscars.
Stuff was in, what, January, February?
Yeah.
That delayed it a little bit, trying to press it. Like
I guess.
Doing the press everything after
I guess.
Doing the shooting for this. You do your Oscar run for a while and then you keep running for that a while. But that, I mean, you still have another, essentially a year.
Yeah, it's
After
really
that.
Weird that it just sat there for a while. That's the thing I don't get. Now, granted, it's not a perfect movie. It's not a knee slapper like you might expect from the title. Because, again, going back to Everybody Wants Some, the title, we know that song from watching Better Off Dead. So you hear, Everybody Wants Some, and you hear that song, and you're like, oh, this is what this movie's going to be about. It's going to be wild and crazy and intense, and that's not what you get. This isn't School of Rock grown up. Right. This is something totally different. So I don't know. I think the studios probably did not have high hopes on this movie if they tried to do a wide release. So they released it as an art film and did limited locations or a limited theater release. I don't know. It's right now it has a nice Metacritic score of 88, I think, which is pretty good. I don't know. I was really surprised that it sat around for so long.
Yeah, and maybe it was just like it kind of falls into that college teen movie genre, and they didn't think it was really super strong as what people would expect from that. I mean, you look at stuff like Neighbors, like I mean, that's that college age type thing where you kind of get young adult stuff in there as well. But I mean, that is just crazy over the top stuff, and not this. This is, I mean, it's still pretty, there's a lot of crazy college party stuff, but not extraordinary things that you've never seen at a college party. You know, it's pretty like realistic to a college party, I feel like.
Right.
And so you don't get over the top humor. You kind of get this realistic-ish look at what college probably was like in the '80s, especially for baseball players and the popular kids on campus. And so, yeah, but it's not like old school, or I'm just trying to think of anything, or, you know, any of those kind of, even those old college movies, you know, it's nothing like those. It's not like Animal House.
Right.
You know? So yeah, maybe they just didn't, I mean, they could have not had a lot of faith in it because they're like,
If you look at his track
record, it's reviewed well.
If you look at his track record, most of his films do not crack $10 million in United States box office.
Yeah.
Most of his films worldwide do not crack $10 million at the box office. The biggest exception and the thing that really got people looking at him again was School of Rock with Jack Black, where he directed that. That made $131 million. But most of them, after that, you've got $45 million, did I see? $44 million on Boyhood, $34 million on Bad News Bears. That's the remake.
Yeah.
And then $23 million on Before Midnight. Everything else beyond that, I guess Before Sunset had $15 million. Everything else is $10 million or less. So, you know, he's not somebody that is your go-to person for big Hollywood productions.
No.
He's your art house director. And he's got stories to tell about interesting characters. And I think he does that. And I think he does that in this movie. I was somewhat disappointed in it. I would agree with what the Metacritic score of, Rotten Tomatoes score of 88%. I'd say, yeah, this is a high B. But this is not something that blew my mind like maybe Dazed and Confused did when I first saw it, you know, years ago. So.
Oh, yeah. I don't think this is like a revolutionary film on the genre. I thought it was a good watch and something I would watch again in the future, but nothing extraordinary is really done in this film. Even if you look at cinematography or, you know, storytelling, it is a solid movie that does explore characters and is limited in the scope of characters that is able to portray, as we talked about, with female characters, but it does do an interesting and good job, I thought, of portraying that type of macho dude character and giving another dimension to those from what we've seen in his previous films. But it's not like the big film of the year or anything, or like it's breaking new ground and anything.
Right. No, it's not.
Yeah.
So do you think that the director grew from the previous film? From Dazed and Confused?
I mean, it's so hard. Like, I've so many films in between.
You've probably
this.
Seen School of Rock.
I guess I didn't know that was for something. Yeah. I have seen School of Rock a couple times, and I enjoy. But nothing else by him, I believe. So, what I think, I mean, I do think he told characters in a more interesting way overall. I thought all of the characters had a more interesting depth than when we saw in Dazed and Confused, which is definite growth. Besides that, though, you know, cinematography, pretty straightforward, like Dazed and Confused. Nothing production-wise in general that is super interesting. I mean, he got people to play baseball, which is nice.
Yeah. Of the two, which one would you recommend? Dazed or Confused, or Everybody Wants Some?
Oh, that's hard. I guess it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for, like, American film culture and how influential, like, you have to go watch Dazed and Confused because it sets up a lot. I mean, that's like early Linklater's career. And he's mm-hmm. been very influential in this kind of independent type scene and gone on and done some big things. So that's definitely, and you get to see a lot of big name actors now in early roles. And so that's really interesting. And there's still a lot of good in Dazed and Confused that is interesting to talk about and dissect. If you, I think, are just wanting more of a good time, maybe watch this movie, because I think it definitely is goofier. Like, the characters are a lot weirder in this film, and they even talk about how weird they are, essentially, and embracing the weirdness as like a picture or something. Like, just be weird, because everyone thinks you're weird anyway, so just be you and be weird. And so I think the characters overall are funnier. Everybody wants some, but so it just depends what you want. You want funnier characters, watch Everyone Some. If you want to see people early in their career, director and actor, and see how it potentially could influence a lot of directors and movies after it, then Dazed and Confused is definitely what you should watch.
All right, cool. Next week on Zach on Film. Ready for this, Zach?
Yeah, okay.
Shaft, 1971. John Shaft is the ultimate in suave black detectives. He finds himself up against Bumpy, the leader of the black crime mob, then against black nationals, and finally working with both against the white mafia, who are trying to blackmail Bumpy by kidnapping his daughter.
Now, why would we watch Shaft?
I think you should watch it. I think there's some interesting things as we look at the genre of blaxploitation films. I think that this is probably one of the better/best examples of blaxploitation films, and what comes out of this genre of the 70s is in how studios are trying to lure other audiences into the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting story. And if you need any other reason to understand the song better, then I think you should watch Shaft from 1971.
Well, that is definitely an interesting choice. You know, you're in October, you think, oh, what's Steven going to make me watch? Because he loves it when I'm scared. And the answer apparently is Shaft.
It's Shaft. You don't have to be scared. This is a good movie.
Okay, well, I'm, you know, when did it come out?
71.
71, okay.
Year after I was born.
All right, so that's a little jump back, but that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone get ready for some Shaft next week on Zach on Film. In the meantime, you can head over to MajorSpoilers.com, where you can find podcasts like this and so much more. It'll fill your entire week of audio listening. You'll enjoy it so much. Go over there, find your podcast you love, and enjoy it through your headphones. While you're there, go to Amazon.com, where you could probably find Everybody Wants Some on maybe Blu-ray. It may be too early right now. Or you can find Shaft or any other great movies you want to watch. It's not going to cost you any extra when you use that link, but a little bit of that money won't go to Jeff Bezos and his Blue Origin project. It'll stay right here at Major Spoilers.
Yeah, keep it here on Earth, man.
Yeah, on Earth. Making Major Spoilers podcasts that you'd love, so it helps that way. But Steven, the Patreon is something new maybe someone hasn't heard about.
Yeah, if you like our work and you'd like to see it continue, head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. It's a nice way of saying thank you. Puts a little bit back into the production of all of the shows that we do week after week and the entire operation here at Major Spoilers. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can give as much as you want and get a little back in return, and go to sleep knowing that your favorite podcasts are going to continue after week.
I love Patreon. I love seeing when it says, like, hey, you supported this season, these podcasts this month.
Yep.
It's a great service.
We are at 69 patrons as of this recording. Uh-oh. I'm hoping next week when we come back, we're at 75.
Ooh,
minimum.
Goal.
Yeah.
Goal, people. Get out there and help, Major Spoilers. But next week, we're talking Shaft on Zach on Film.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.